Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
And we welcome you to Talking.Golf. I'm Rob Hernandez. Gary D'Amato joins me for our weekly look back at the wonderful world of golf. And Gary, I don't think it can get any better than what we witnessed last week at the Legend at Merrill Hills in Waukesha, the 123rd Wisconsin State Amateur. And it was a topsy-turvy leaderboard for a while, but in the end, Garrett Jones with a great back nine the final day gets it done at age 39, his first Wisconsin State Amateur Championship. And you and I have covered a lot of these going back into the 80s. I don't remember a more popular champion than Garrett Jones. I mean, you know, he touched so many different people in so many different ways, you know, at different points in his life. But boy, oh boy, a lot of people sure liked the outcome of that state am.
For sure, Rob. You know, it really meant a lot to Garrett. I watched him walk from the 18th green up to the clubhouse on that steep hill at the Legend at Merrill Hills, and he must have been stopped at least 15 times, maybe more, by well-wishers, friends, fellow competitors who gave him a hug or a high five or, you know, said some nice words to him. Everyone, very, very popular champion, really wanted it bad, Rob. I was talking to – I played Nagawaki last Friday, and I was talking to Tom Halla, who was paired with Garrett and Bob Gregorski in the first two rounds. Right. And he said the first day Tom gets to the range and he's hitting balls next to Garrett, who pulls out a TrackMan and sets it up on the range. Halla said, that shows how serious he was about this. You know, that's like a $20,000 unit, and this is the state amateur. So Garrett really wanted to win and really happy that he did.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess let's start first with the champion. What do you think allowed this year, this week, to be the week for Garrett Jones?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. You know, I think, you know, he's a very mature and smart player, which, you know, the Legend at Merrill Hills was definitely going to reward that kind of player. He hits it straight, and the strength of his game is his putting. And you were there to witness what those greens were like at Merrill Hills, very fast, tilted greens that if you got above the hole, they were very, very, or even side hill putts were very, very difficult. And Garrett is really good, is a really, really good putter with a great short game. So I think he had those things up, and, you know, his game was a good fit for that golf course.
Yeah, the record will show three birdies and four holes to start the back nine, but it sure seemed at Merrill Hills, Gary, like it was more of a case of not getting yourself in trouble to the degree that you would have you know, bogey, maybe double bogey staring in your face. In fact, I can remember one of the rounds coming up on Garrett Jones where he had, I don't know necessarily if he misclubbed into a green, but was trying to go after a back hole location and wound up hitting it probably too far up the slope to get to the hole, and it went through the green under a branch by another tree, and then he's got no shot coming back because it was a back pin. But he really, I thought, as the week went along, did a better job of avoiding those situations.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. You know, he really, and first of all, I apologize to our listeners for Rascal barking in the background. he makes cameos on our podcast from time to time.
He sure does. Love Rascal.
But, yeah, you know, he did steer clear of those situations, and he played a near flawless back nine until Garrett got to the 18th hole, and he finally hit one crooked. Luckily, he had a three-shot cushion because, you know, he made a double bogey on the last hole, but he was definitely in fairways and greens mode. Once he got the lead, once he got a couple strokes ahead on that back nine, he just was a machine hitting fairways and greens. He just wanted to put his ball in the middle of greens and two-putt and get out of there, and that's what he did on almost every hole coming in.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because that situation he was in on 18, he kind of fanned his drive out to the right. And I talked earlier with Kevin Van Rossum, the club champ at Merrill Hills, who was in on an exemption for being the club champ, but he's played in many state amps. And his shot of the day came from about that same spot. I believe it was a little bit about maybe a few yards closer to the fairway. But that was, he said, I was behind a tree, and he said, the tree on 18. And it was the tree. I mean, it is probably about it has to be a 200-year-old oak-type tree, because it is mammoth, and And Garrett was, you know, he didn't have that kind of shot to keep an 8-iron under the branches. He just had to try to run it out to the side. And then I think he thought he chipped it, you know, far enough to let it run on the green, but it was short. And but like you said, he had three shots to play with, used two of them, and winds up winning by one. And if that's the only blemish in a final round in that pressure at age 39, that when you never have ever finished the deal, I guess you can live with that, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair to Garrett, you know, he punched back into the fairway, and he happened to punch his ball, Rob, right next to a drain that had the surrounding area had been shotted over.
Oh, really?
And it was very wet. And what I've found out since writing the final game story was he called Phil Poletti, the rules official, over and asked for relief because it was clearly a pretty wet area. And at the same time, Jeff Perkle, the director of rules and competitions who set up the course for the tournament, was at the top of the hill, kind of saw what was going on and radioed down to Phil Poletti. He gets relief there, give him relief, but Phil got the message too late, apparently. It was not marked. So Garrett had to hit that shot from a tough lie. It was pretty soggy down. And as anyone who plays golf knows, if you hit just a tenth of an inch behind the ball on a soggy turf, it's going to take a lot off the shot. That's exactly what happened to Garrett. So if Phil had gotten that message, you know, 10 seconds earlier, Garrett would have gotten relief from that lie and probably would have knocked it close to the pin. So interesting little story there.
Well, all's well that ended well, and Garrett walks away the winner. And now in the course of his career, he's won the WSGA Junior Championship. He's won two match plays. He's won a state am. He's also won a four ball. Now, somebody on Twitter suggested, and it kind of led to our lead note then the last round of the tournament, about the state am slam. If we're talking all WSGA events, Garrett Jones becomes the third golfer to win those four tournaments, joining John Palin and Bob Gregorski, a pretty good group, two Hall of Famers. And then if you substitute someone asked it, why wouldn't you substitute the Ray Fisher? And the Ray Fisher is a Wisconsin Public Links Association event. However, if you take out the four ball and insert the Ray Fisher, then you've got all individual tournaments. In terms of stroke play, match play, junior, and basically it's the unofficial state am. It's the one where if this one's all about trying to chase even par, the other one's trying to chase 22 under par, and he's won both, and that's equally as impressive. And I went back and looked, also John Palin, Bob Gregorski, and nobody else. A couple have come close. Charlie Delsman in one situation, I think. Archie Dadian in one situation, but Mark Bumowski, because I don't think BMO or Archie ever won a junior, but it's pretty impressive what Garrett Jones now has done at age 39, and the fact that few have now, not many allow themselves to because they turn professional. Garrett did turn professional, came back to the amateur ranks, and has picked up where he left off. I guess as you look at his body of work, Gary, It's impressive what he's done. What do you think?
I agree, Rob. It's a great resume. He's definitely not done yet. He's kept himself in great shape, and he's worked hard the last few years to gain strength and speed. And he's hitting the ball. He said he's 15 yards longer now than he was, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. So, he's got a big window still open to add more to that resume. But if he stopped winning now, it would be one of the better resumes we've seen, you know, in the last 20 or 25 years. You know, if he can pick off a state open at some point, that would pretty much cement his place in the Hall of Fame. Although I think right now he's Hall of Fame worthy. How do you look at that?
I would agree. After seeing, you know, what he's done at those levels, and then of course all the close calls that he's had and then once he left professional golf, where I believe he won, when I asked him in the parking lot before the final round or after the third round, I said, you know, do you remember how many times you won on the mini tours? And I think it was something like 15 times, just never got hot at the right time to get through tour school, qualifying school. But, you know, he's come back and he's like you said, he's not only kept himself in great shape, but he's also allowed himself to you know, grow as a person. I mean, he's married. They're talking children at some point here. which at age 39, I think that window is starting to get pretty, small. But, he also has a job. I think it's RB Wealth Management was on the hat. And so he's a financial planner. And, so he has a day job. You know, at that age, that's the thing that I think, Gary, we don't give enough attention to, is the fact that not everybody is able to do this juggling act. We saw Becky Cloughlin come back and play the state women's open. She's gone through law school at Marquette. She's in the legal profession now. She played the state women's am to kind of gear up for a U.S. women's mid-am qualifier, but that's about as much as she can play. And Garrett Jones, now that he earned the exemption to the U.S. amateur for winning the state amateur, might have to pull out of the state open. Those are the kinds of give and take you have. You know, we've seen it with Dustin Schwab. He'll play the Ray Fisher, but maybe not the state am unless it's in town, but he'll play the state open. So it's hard when you're a working person trying to be a good golfer at the same time. That's why I really admire these career amateurs like Bob Gregorski, like Tom Halla, and, these guys have put together some golf resumes, Gary, that are just incredible. Tom Halla, has only missed like two state ams in the last 30 years. It's amazing. And was, right near the top again this year, for a while, and this coming after, a heart attack last year. So I really am impressed with what Garrett Jones has been able to do. A state open would put the frosting on the cake, but, as far as his amateur career, I think there's a lot he can do at the mid-am level and at the USAM level. And then one other thing I wanted to ask you about is, as I was watching him at various times, you know who I saw a lot of in him was Mario Tiziani. They have the same build. They've kept them in the same shape, and they have kind of that same swing in the way they go at it. And clearly, if Garrett wanted to dip his toes back in the professional ranks at age 50, he probably could. It would be a long shot to try to do that because he, has been away from the professional game and never really had any status on the PGA Tour. But, I can see if he continues to do what he's doing, he can call his shots as far as how much good golf he wants to play, in his own little environment.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rob. Priorities change as you get older. Of course, he's married, as you pointed out, he has a job, and he talked to both of us, I think, about wanting to start a family. So, life changes, and to stay sharp and competitive and stay in shape and do all the things you need to do to play at a very high level, gets harder and harder, I think, as you get into your 40s. But other guys have done it, certainly. A lot of people think Mark Bumowski could have played on the Champions Tour had he had some financial backing, and I'm in that camp. I think he probably would have done very well out there because into his mid-50s and late-50s, he was playing exceptional golf. And so there's a blueprint to follow. Other guys in the state have done it, and I see no reason why Garrett can't, continue to stay sharp and win tournaments, and who knows, maybe give it a shot someday on the Champions Tour.
Meanwhile, Gary, I want to ask you about the impact a win like this has on the, kind of the mid-am set. I go back to when I first got to know Garrett as a high school kid at Iowa Grant High School, same high school that gave us Badger basketball coach Greg Gard. Garrett grew up in Rui, and nobody in his family played golf. I go back to a comment that in a story I wrote back in, I think it was, it was probably back in 2000 maybe, and where I quoted his coach, Bob Faraday, and Bob at that point had coached, and it's not easy coaching, a golf team at a very small school where it's pretty much football in the fall, basketball in the winter, baseball in the spring, and golf competes against baseball, sometimes, getting kids to do both in the same season. But, Garrett, started out at Platteville Golf and Country Club when he could drive. He started working at House on the Rock Resort in Spring Green where he could practice then. But Bob Faraday said that he's coached many years and hardly ever had a kid that had a membership to a golf course. When Garrett arrived and started, kind of putting golf on the map, his senior year, there were 14 kids in the program at Little Iowa Grant High School that became members at Platteville Golf and Country Club. And he said his influence will be felt in the golf program for years, and to a degree it still is. But, Garrett's one of those guys, kind of like I think Mike Bilowski, Dustin Schwab, Jack Schultz. I think we've got a lot of people setting a great example on the men's side for being able to play good quality golf, you know, into your late 30s, into your 40s, and then, you know, our senior group here is as good as it gets as far as competitive senior golfers, and we saw a few of them in the field this week. What do you think Garrett's win is going to do in terms of maybe inspiring other people just to stay with it as they get into that age group that Garrett's in?
Well, I think, you know, it's Garrett, but it's not just Garrett. As you mentioned, you know, Jack Schultz was a defending champion and, you know, has won a couple of Ray Fishers. Dustin Schwab has won a couple of Ray Fishers. There are guys like Kevin Van Rossum, who has a family but still plays exceptional golf. Joe Weber, Travis Pranchinski, there are some Corey Ioane. There are some really good mid-ams, and Garrett certainly is now and has been at the top of that list. But all those guys, I think, should inspire the younger players that, you know, you can keep doing this. You can keep playing at a high level for a long, long time if you practice, work diligently, manage your time, and do all the things you need to do to stay at that level. I think all these guys are inspiring.
Another couple guys that, you know, probably fit that bill were right there on Garrett's heels, Joe Duchateau out of Fond du Lac, Ross Thompson out of Madison. You know, both at different points in their life, Joe Duchateau has kind of, you know, now gone the caddy route, working at Erin Hills. And then did I hear him say Bay Hill in the wintertime?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a pretty good story there. And Joe, you know, I think, you know, might be the next guy from, you know, what he's only 29, though. Is that right?
Yeah, Joe is, I believe, 29. Yeah, and has had some close calls, you know, in the Fisher and now the State of Am, too. A number of close calls he's had over the years, and he's poised to break through one of these times, too.
And Ross Thompson, the assistant coach at Wisconsin, really doing a great job of balancing his role with Mike Wilson and the Badgers. I think those two are a dynamic 1-2 punch as far as the, you know, coaching duo. And you know, he's been in the mix several times. Ben Scogan, the former Badger, resurfaced now in approaching his mid to late 20s and had a wonderful State Am, finishing T5. And then it was a lot of the guys that we thought we'd see there. Although one of the guys that I'm not sure we had picked at the start of the week, Drake Wilcox, I know it was a tough final round for him shooting the 77, but 73, 67, 71, he's one of these many guys, Gary, that's trying to figure out whether pro golf is in his future. I thought he really acquitted himself well in a tough course setup. And the fact that he finished ahead of guys like Jacob Beckman, Cameron Husk, Will Harned, you know, and guys that we really, you know, kind of had pegged earlier in the week to really be there, said a lot about what Drake Wilcox did last week.
Yeah, Drake had a great week. You know, Cameron, not so much. You know, we expected Cameron to, if not win, to be right there. And he sort of was until the last round. I thought Cameron might put up a really good one in the last round, and he didn't. And basically, you know, when I shook his hand after he was done playing, he just said, just wasn't my week. But yeah, Drake had a very good week and makes his decision probably a little tougher on what he's going to do, I think.
Bennett Swavely with a good week at T5. I thought he was going to be a guy, 72, 71, 71. And if he had gotten it down there at 71 again, he would have been you know, right at Garrett's heels. Didn't really get anything going the final day. But then on Monday, we're recording this on Tuesday, he goes out in one of the two qualifiers for the NV5 championship on the Korn Ferry Tour, shoots 69 and misses a spot in the Korn Ferry event by just two shots. Bennett Swavely, I think, is, you know, again on the doorstep, and now if assuming Cameron Husk turns professional next month at the State Open, you know, it'll be kind of Bennett Swavely, Ty Kress, Jacob Beckman, Will Harned, who had a good, you know, State amateur, and you know, those guys from that group will be the ones that sort of slide in and take over. It really has become the circle of life in amateur golf in Wisconsin, hasn't it, Gary?
It has been. And, you know, you mentioned Jacob Beckman. Boy, he's had a great year without really winning anything. He hasn't been rewarded for all his hard work and for the progress he's made in this game over the last couple of years. He's had close calls in four or five tournaments this year, Rob. And, you know, I just think that every close call he's had, you know, lost in a playoff in the Fisher. I think he led the Dairyland maybe after a round and finished fourth or fifth. You know, had a real tough match in the semifinals in the match play, losing in 25 holes. So all these things are going to make him tougher, I think. They're all learning experiences, and I would expect Jacob Beckman to be, you know, to contend in the state amateur the next few years for sure.
And a couple, three names out of this rising group that, you know, I think we haven't talked much about that we'll want to keep an eye on. Max Brood out of Wanakee. He won the Northern Sun Intercollegiate Championship over at Minnesota State Mankato this spring, and went to the NCAA Division II Championship, and then went in the he was in the transfer portal at that time, and explored options, and is going to go play Division I golf at Coastal Carolina. I think we should need to keep an eye on him. Evan Myers is transferring in after stops at Texas A&M for 4 years, Nebraska for 1 year. He's still, because of COVID and other eligibility things with redshirting, has 2 years left, I believe, or maybe this will be the last of his final year out of the two, because he used the one at Nebraska. But he's going from Nebraska to Wisconsin to play, and he finished T17, and I was pretty impressed with his scores, Gary. 74, 72, 75, 75, probably not a lot of experience at Merrill Hills, and with a lot to prove, I think, that he belongs and that he, you know, is going to challenge for time at Wisconsin, because they've got a pretty good group coming back.
Yeah, I watched him play nine holes with one of the groups I was following, I think on Wednesday, not the final round, but the penultimate round. And he was longer than his playing partners by 20 to 30 yards. He's a big guy who hits it a long way. I saw him make a couple of mistakes, you know, a short iron into a green. He flew the green and had an impossible chip coming back. Stuff like that that, you know, as time goes on and you learn how to score, you learn how to manage your game and the course a little better. I think he's going to help Wisconsin, Rob. I think he's going to probably play some there. And I think Mike Wilson is counting on him to maybe be in the lineup.
And then we've talked about him before, but Cody Getzky out of Heartland, he's the young man who I believe will be a rising junior this year at IMG Academy in Florida. You know, we see him during the summer at times. We hear about him in the school year at times, kind of like Jessica Geiser, who also was from Heartland and just wrapped up 4 years down there, is going to Florida. Cody Getzky, now this is one of his home courses. He's a Legends Club member, but I'm told also plays a lot of golf up at Shaniqua, because it can be tough to get on at the Legends Clubs. But he said he plays more of his golf over, I think, at Bristlecone. And but Cody had a wonderful state amateur championship, 74-70, and then struggled a bit in the last round with 78. But he's grown a little bit. You knew that that he's caught the attention of coaches at the next level, because both Mike Wilson and Marquette coach Steve Bailey was out there. I saw him for the first time in a long time, and I just I missed him at the NCAAs this year, because he, you know, the last couple of years he's been on the committee out there. But Steve Bailey, Mike Wilson, I'm sure more than just those two are starting to take an interest in Cody Getzky. Did you get a chance to see Cody at all, and did you have any impressions about, you know, maybe comparing him? Because when we saw him last, it was, you know, again, he looked a little bit, you know, more like a, you know, a young, you know, sophomore in high school than he did now a junior, you know, who's had a year of development when we saw him at the State Open last year at Central World.
I didn't get to see Cody play, Rob, but I said hi to him at the awards ceremony after the championship. And I'll tell you one thing, the last time I had seen him was a couple years ago at the, I believe it was at the Drive Chip and Putt National Finals at Augusta National, where he qualified for. And he has grown quite a bit. He was a very small back then. And it struck me when I stood next to him last Thursday, just how big and how much he'd grown. And if he's got another growth spurt, watch out, because a really, really talented young man.
And I think that's the same thing with Drake Wilcox, because when he won the Division III state title as a senior, I mean, he had a lot of room physically to grow, and he has, and now looks very solid, drives the ball a long way, and after 4 years at Queen's University of Charlotte, they started out at Division II, moved to Division I, and he had a great senior year. It's just really cool, I think, for us to see these young junior golfers grow both physically and mentally in how they approach the game. And that takes me to my last topic on the State Am, the golf course. It was in phenomenal shape. It was the different test of golf we thought. I think the fact that we saw so many veteran golfers in the mix, including one who won it, speaks volumes for what, Merrill Hills threw at the entire field. What did you think of a stadium at Merrill Hills and the way that it played out? Because it seemed to kind of test the creative minds in terms of playing a golf course for these guys.
Yeah, I thought it was tremendous. It was the great change of pace after Sand Valley Resort and Erin Hills the last couple of years. All great courses in different ways. And Jack Gaudian, the founder and CEO of the Legends Clubs, who owns four Legends Clubs now, including Legend of Bergamont down in Oregon. But Jack loves the attention on his courses, loves treating players to great conditions. And it was all of that, Rob. It was a great test. You know, after the first round, where the leader was, I believe, 5 under, I thought maybe 3 or 4 under would win, and it wound up being even par. Course got more difficult as the days went on because it was soft to start with and then dried out as the week went on and got tougher and tougher. I thought it was a great test for the best players in the state, and I would hope you would agree with that.
Absolutely. You know, the greens were spectacular. The hole locations, you know, you had to be careful, but I thought they were really good. Really forced everybody to be on the correct side of the pins and play from below. I thought you were rewarded, you know, greatly if you did that. Just looking out from the clubhouse at the fairways and the way they were mowed, and then hearing Jack tell us that, the maintenance crew, and not just the Merrill Hills maintenance staff necessarily, but you know, he called in resources from the other two clubs in the Milwaukee area to help out. And, it was impeccable, just the way that the lines were mowed in the fairways. I mean, it was Merrill Hills at all of its grandeur. And it hadn't hosted a state am since 2009. And that was before Jack took it over in 13. And, you know, we're on the Hall of Fame committee. I know that going back over time, there have been a couple of course owners, developers that have gotten into the Hall of Fame. I was fascinated in our conversations with Jack Gaudian and Gary because of the passion that he showed for what he does. And, I think as we talk to him more, we kind of, at least I realize the impact he's had in the game. I mean, he literally rescued Merrill Hills from, I'm not going to say financial disaster or ruin, but they were starting to be challenged financially to keep the club at the level it was, you know, all through those great years when it hosted. I think this was the sixth time they've hosted a state amateur, but Merrill Hills has always been in that upper echelon of clubs in the Milwaukee area. And then knowing what he did at Bergamont in Oregon, because it opened when I was still the golf writer at the State Journal, and the golf course was always great, but the housing around it had a real tough time getting going. And he has helped nurture that. Now if you go to that that side of Oregon, just south of Madison, you see these great homes lining the golf course. It is now what the Bergamont Golf Club was designed to be when it was opened. And, I think Jack's impact on golf is pretty phenomenal. And then to see how vested he was in the way the course played, he desperately wanted even par to win. He didn't want Garrett Jones to double bogey the last hole to get there, but he got his state am. The state got, WSGA got his its state am. I think in the end, everyone was happy. But, you know, I mean, Jack Gaudian, I think at some point, Gary, has to be considered for, you know, for the Hall of Fame, simply because of the impact he's had in terms of private club golf in the Milwaukee area.
And that says nothing, Rob, about the events that he's hosted at his courses to benefit veterans, the military. He's very, very patriotic guy, and he's had a lot of fundraisers, charity fundraisers over the years to benefit different military charities. And also the AJGA events, he's big time in the junior golf. He's very proud of his association with junior golf, and they've hosted those Legends Clubs, have hosted a lot of events over the years that a lot of other clubs might have turned their noses up at. So yeah, kudos to him. And we should also mention, Rob, kudos to Jeff Perkle for a great setup. The course was a little soft the first couple days. The greens were soft, which enabled some guys to break par, but had it been firm and fast the entire all 4 days, you know, I dare say, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 over par might have won. So yeah, kudos to Jack and to Jeff Perkle for presenting a great test.
And working together on that. I think that's also important because, you know, a lot of times it can be one side or the other that tries to take over with what they feel is the right thing for that event. And I just think they hit a home run here, and it was a great week at Merrill Hills. So we've got that behind us. It's kind of a – I thought it was going to be a lull this week, Gary. And then if you go on our website today, we filled the scoreboard with events yesterday. I believe there were four WPGA Junior Tour events, including one at Oneida Golf and Riding in Green Bay, one at Bullseye Golf Club in Wisconsin Rapids, one at Timber Ridge Golf Club in Minocqua, and then, of course, the big one that sells out right away, the Junior Tour event at the Irish Course at Whistling Straits. You have the Badger Mutual Insurance Women's Amateur. You had, other events. We had, two waves of Korn Ferry qualifying for the Chicago event with people in them. Not as quiet as I thought. You also have the Badger Mutual Women's Amateur, which is wrapping up this morning down at Brown Deer Park. Quiet, but not, but busy this week, I guess, as we wait for the next wave of championships next week. I believe it's the Junior Girls next week.
Yeah, every week we're loaded up with at least two or three significant events, and that doesn't count all the junior events that the WPGA puts on. So we're about halfway through the summer, but a long way to go in terms of tournament competition and events that we'll be at and covering.
Nora Roberts took a two-stroke lead over Cassie Pistewick going into the final round of the Badger Mutual Insurance Women's Amateur at Brown Deer Park. It was funny. I was walking the final round with that last group, and McKenna Nelson was out there. Joe Duchateau caddied for her at the U.S. Junior Girls Championship qualifier at the Oaks last month. And, of course, Joe's dad, Don, has been McKenna's swing coach. She wasn't aware of the Badger Mutual, which a year ago it conflicted with the Girls Junior, and this year it was off that date. So I'm glad that it looks like a bit of a boost in the field this year. And then they would have had, presumably, Elise Hoven in the field, Gary, but a neat story developing over in Minnesota, where after one round at the Minnesota Women's Amateur Championship, Maddie Hicks is leading by two shots over Catherine Van Aragon, I believe. And of course, Maddie Hicks was on the bag last month down at Meadowbrook Country Club in Racine for Elise Hoven when she managed to put on just a clinic in the final round, and she won the Wisconsin State Women's Open. So what a great combination, Maddie Hicks and Elise Hoven, and we'll see if Maddie can keep keep the mojo going over there. They're playing at a golf course called Minnewashka Golf Club in Glenwood, Minnesota, and she shot 71 there yesterday. And they've got a who's who of great college and amateur golfers over there. So whether you're caddying or playing, Gary, it's been a good summer. And then we've got two guys over at the U.S. Junior didn't fare very well, but interestingly, Winston Knobloch out of Winneconne and Casey Nichol out of Wanakee both finished towards the bottom of the field, but they were two shots apart. And at the scoring number in between them was a young man named Charlie Woods. And I believe Charlie didn't have the best round either, but they were playing Oakland Hills, site of Andy North's last U.S. Open victory. And so everyone's back on the course today on Tuesday, and the final day of the 2 days of qualifying. Winston and Casey don't play until the afternoon, so we'll have to see there. I didn't check to see if Charlie has been able to rebound. He also doesn't play till the afternoon, so they'll have to wait. But they've got a lot of work to do to get in the top 64 for match play. So too bad about Charlie Woods. A lot of attention, a lot of pressure. Also, I know Winston and Casey both had higher expectations than scores in the low 80s at the qualifier. But every step on this journey, Gary, you learn something, don't you?
You sure do. I feel for Charlie Woods. The pressure on that kid. I'm sure Tiger Woods is doing everything in his power to diffuse that pressure, but I read a couple of stories this morning that Charlie had a gallery in the hundreds following him, and that is very unusual at a U.S. junior. Typically until the final day and the leaders group, maybe the most groups get, parents and a few relatives and a couple of friends following them. And Charlie has huge galleries, and Tiger is in the gallery, and people are asking Charlie for his autograph as he's trying to play. Stuff like that is happening. So that's very tough on a, what is Charlie, 15 or 16? 15,
right.
Maybe? Yeah, very tough on a 15-year-old kid.
And then I get back down here to Arizona, Gary, and a couple of former Wisconsin golfers doing great things down here. Eric Goldofsky, a former Badger out of Sun Prairie, now living in Tolleson, Arizona, shot 74-69 and finished fifth at the Southern Amateur Championship down here. I guess they call it the Southwest Amateur. It's just one of those that they, you know, where they're able to kind of, you know, get golfers from, I believe, a couple of states to play. And it's not the Arizona Amateur that was last year where, or last month where they had the stroke play to match play, but just the Southern Amateur down at Tucson National where they used to have the Kohlegaard Classic. So a good performance by him. And then we've got the Arizona State Open coming up. And during one of the five or six qualifiers they had, while I was up in Wisconsin, at one of them, former Badger Max Schwarz and former Marquette golfer Tyler Leach out of Spring Valley shot matching 69s to qualify in the fourth place positions. So they'll play at the Arizona State Open here coming up in a couple of weeks, the 81st Gary State Open. So they don't have one quite as rich in history as Wisconsin, but they certainly have a melting pot of golfers, and they will play that down at Papago Golf Club, which I believe now is the Arizona State University home course here in Phoenix on July 29th through the 31st. So near and far, Gary, they continue to play a lot of great golf.
You know, Rob, I can't imagine that there were a whole lot of golf courses in Arizona 85 years ago.
No.
Before air conditioning and probably watered fairways, there probably wasn't a lot of golf to be played, but there certainly is now. As you well know.
And before golf carts and hydroflasks, that's the other thing that keeps going at this time of year. And it was, I think, 112 when I got back. Or it's supposed to be 112 today, so I might test it out later this afternoon and get around in. I haven't played in a while, but we got a couple things coming up here. I think we only got about a minute or so to go. Gary, you're heading off to watch the Brewers at Wrigley Field and then head over to Michigan to check out a course over there. But we've got Rick Platel checked in with the folks over at Pioneer Point in Madison. And as I was leaving, you know, Madison yesterday in the plane, we flew over to TPC Wisconsin. And it, you know, reminded me that both TPC Wisconsin with Steve Stricker's, you know, fingerprints, and then Pioneer Point over on the west side, you know, part of Jeff Haynes' development over there with, you know, Jerry Kelly's involvement, you know, took old courses in the Madison area and kind of pumped new life into them. Pioneer Point didn't get quite as much attention as TPC Wisconsin, but it fills part of the footprint that Tumbledown Trails Golf Course, a little 18-hole public course, had back in the day, started by Jim Watts, a local landscaper. And I went back and found some photos. Hopefully that'll go with the story. And they've got replica greens. It's a cool concept, but Rick's done a nice job of explaining what the 13-hole golf course over on the west side of Madison is all about. It's kind of a neat concept, and we've seen a few more of those kind of courses pop up in the last few years.
Yeah, I have not seen Pioneer Point. I've got to get to the west side of Madison and see that one. There's a lot of golf west of Madison that I have not played, Rob. So one of these days, when you come back, we're going to have to make a little trip out there and play some of those courses that I have not seen yet.
Indeed, Gary. We'll have to get you out to Pioneer Point, Pleasant View, and then continue west. House on the Rock Resort in Spring Green is a good one. The two little courses, the Spring Green Municipal and the Old American Legion course up in Plain, a couple of little nine-holers have a lot of history to them. And then maybe get all the way out to Viroqua Hills in Viroqua, because that one seems to be very popular as well. All in due time. For now, safe travels to Chicago and Michigan. And we will talk golf again next week with Gary D'Amato. This has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. This is Rob Hernandez. Thanks for joining us.